Geshe-la will be back next week to pick up the lineage. So we'll do three prostrations. Om Namo Manjushriye, Namo Sushriye, Namo Uttamaya Shriye Soha. Om Namo Manjushriye, Namo Sushriye, Namo Uttamaya Shriye Soha. Om Namo Manjushriye, Namo Sushriye, Namo Uttamaya Shriye Soha. Okay. See, I need a prayer book. Is there one over here? Thank you. On the gold prayer book, you can turn to page 34. If you have one of the white binders, it's in the first page in there. We'll begin with Shakyamuni Buddha's mantra three times. Follow that with the Medicine Buddha stanza and the Medicine Buddha mantra seven times. Taya ta om mune imune Mahamunaye Soha Tayata Om Mune Mune Mahamunaye Soha Tayata Om Mune Mune Maha Munaye Soha. Bhagawan, with equal compassion for all, whose name, when merely heard, dispels the suffering of the lower realms, dispeller of disease and the three poisons, I prostrate to Medicine Buddha, lapis life. Tayata om benkanze benkanze maha benkanze benkanze Raja Samugate Soha Tayata Om Benkanze Benkanze Ma Benkanze 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 Gate Soha Tayata Om Benkanze Benkanze Ma Benkanze Benkanze Raja Samugate Soha Tayata Om Benkanze Benkanze Ma Benkanze Benkanze Raja Samugate Soha Tayata Om Benkanze Benkanze Ma Benkanze Benkanze Raja Samugate Soha Tayata Om Benkanze Benkanze Ma Benkanze Benkanze Raja Samugate Soha Tayata Om Benkanze Benkanze Maha Benkanze Benkanze Raja Samugate Soha. And now we'll read I'm looking at my cheat sheet here. Okay, let's read Refuge in Bodhicitta three times and the Four Immeasurables once. We'll do this in English. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, the Supreme Assembly. By my practice of giving and other perfections, may I become a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the happiness free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment and hatred for enemies. And let's see, then on page 37, down at the bottom of the page, let's do 8 Chin Rezig mantras and 7 Tara mantras. Om Mani Padme Hum, 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 Om Mani Padme Hum. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu So A Om Tare Tu Tare So A Om Tare Tu Tare Tu So A Om Tare Tu Tare So A Om Tare Tu Tare Tu So A Om Tare Tu Tare To raise so, Om Tare Tu Tare Tu raise so. Okay, so the young people may go to their classes. Okay. Okay. And let's see, do we have any announcements? You want to make it? Yes. Do we have a Okay. Any other announcements? Okay. Well, good morning, everyone. My name's Robbie Watkins. I'm a longtime member of the center, and I'm here in what we assume is going to be Geshe-la's absence. So he may show up again, which would be fine with me, but my understanding that he is off in Charlotte. He and Geshe Sampo are in Charlotte for the dedication of a Vietnamese Buddhist temple there. So I'm leading the discussion this morning, and it's very much going to be a discussion, not a formal teaching. Will the mic be, can we use the mic? When we are having the discussion, use them. Wait for the mic before you speak, because it helps those of us who are getting older and our ears are not as sharp as they used to be. And also, there are people watching this on the web, so they can't hear anything if you don't speak into a mic. Okay, let's see. Let me just get an idea who's here. Do you have anyone who's here for the very first time this morning? Okay, bunch of people. Yeah, please stay for the newcomer session. They'll be in here right after the teachings. Yeah, so welcome. I hope you find the session this morning helpful. Let's begin by doing some meditation, and then I'll introduce our speaker, Mr. Peter Murphy, for this morning. Just giving Peter a hard time, yeah? Yeah? Okay. We'll begin by doing some meditation. Begin by checking your posture. If you're sitting in a chair, have your feet flat on the floor or on a cushion underneath your feet. Don't slump back in your chair, but sit a little bit forward. Whether you're in a chair or on a cushion, your back is a little bit straighter than you normally sit. Not rigid, but a little bit extended. Your head is straight on your shoulders. Eyes either just very slightly open or lightly closed. Mouth lightly closed, not clenched. Shoulders relaxed and down a little bit towards the back, so your chest opens up. Upper arms away from the sides of your torso. And it's traditional to put right hand on left, with thumbs touching slightly below the navel. Signifies the union of wisdom and compassion, that is enlightenment. And if you're on a cushion, your legs are in a position that you find comfortable and non-distracting. If you're in a chair, as I say, you have your feet flat on the floor or on a cushion. So take just a minute and scan your body, working from the top down. And if there are any areas of tension or discomfort, address those now so that they don't become a distraction during the meditation. The point of the posture is not to torture yourself, but to establish a stable, comfortable posture at the beginning of the meditation that maintains itself and is not a source of distraction. And having established our posture, we'll begin by taking 3 deep breaths from the abdomen, with the stomach expanding on the in-breath, and coming back towards our spine on the out-breath. Just 3 deep breaths like that. And now we allow our breathing to return to its normal pattern. And as always, we begin the meditation by setting our motivation. We've already done that to some degree when we were reading the prayers, but we probably weren't super focused on it, to be honest. But it says that the highest motivation, the most powerful motivation, is what's known as the bodhicitta motivation, that everything we do, even something as simple as sitting quietly here for a few minutes, is done for the purpose of developing our mind, our qualities of wisdom and compassion, so that we can be of greater benefit to others. And that's not necessarily the way we think most of the time, but if we can just get a glimpse of that before we begin our meditation, it said to really spark the power of the changes going on in our mind. So see if you can generate the bodhicitta motivation, even if just slightly. And having set our motivation, we begin the actual meditation process. We're going to do a very simple breathing meditation. We just place our consciousness on the physical movement of the air in and out through our nostrils. Mind directly perceiving movement of air. Nothing more, nothing less than that. We're not thinking about it. We're not picturing it to ourselves. We're not describing it to ourselves. Just direct perception, so that we can say, in a way, mind and breath are of the same nature. They are identical. And every time, as inevitably will happen, our mind wanders off the breath and goes to some other thought, we just set that aside gently, kindly, and come back to the breath over and over and over again. And we'll do that for the next 5 or 6 minutes. So as we come to the end of the meditation, let's just think a little bit about why we're here. It's said that if we're training in the Buddhist path, our two great aspirations are to develop wisdom, which is seeing the world around us as it truly is, free of our projections and misconceptions, and to develop compassion, which is the wish that others be free of suffering. Both enormous tasks to develop those two qualities. We have some qualities, some degree of those qualities already, but they're quite limited. So I just wanted to specifically speak about compassion, because that really seems important in the world we have today. The important, compassion is not limited to those people we like or those people we admire. Compassion is the wish that all beings, those we dislike, those we really hate, that those beings also be free of suffering. So let's just think about that as we go about our routine over the next week. Compassion means including everyone. And as always, we end our meditation with a dedication. We acknowledge that we've done something of value, and may the positive imprints we've placed on our mind stream not be lost, but may they ripen in the future in a way that benefits all sentient beings. Okay, so take a couple minutes and just introduce yourself to other people in the rooms, those you know and those you don't know.
Great.
Is anyone here in the current Discovering Buddhism module? A couple people, good, not many, because I'm going to steal some of their material today. But it's always good to talk. The current module is on karma, and there are a couple, I've been listening to some of it online, and there are a couple questions that came up that I thought were really interesting, I thought would make for a good discussion this morning. Let's see. Who had something good happen to them this week? Raise your hand. Okay, who had something bad happen to them this week? Raise your hand. Okay, yeah, okay. Who had something good and something bad happen to them this week? Okay, who saw something going on in the world that they don't like? Okay. A lot of people don't like this. Okay. Who saw something going on in the world they do like? Okay. Great. How many people take 100% responsibility for everything good, everything bad that happened to them, everything they saw in the world they liked, everything they saw in the world they don't like? We got a couple. Okay, we got a couple people. Okay. Which is kind of the Buddhist point of view is that everything that happens to us, everything both good and bad, everything that we perceive is at the most profound level a result of our own mind. Which is a very, I think it's a very difficult thought to align with, but everything, not just the good things, not just the bad things, but all of it. There is no randomness. Nothing just occurs. The world is not this hard, concrete thing out there that we just bump into and get bruised, but it is a product of our mind. And the mechanism by which this works, according to the Buddha, and he really didn't invent this, he just described it. This is based on his observations as he sat under the Bodhi tree, is through karma. Who can give me a... What's karma mean? Anybody know?
Action.
Action, okay. And what the Buddha is saying is that every action we perform, everything we do, everything we say, everything we think, actions of body, speech, and mind, makes an imprint on our mind stream, plants a seed. The Tibetan term for this is a bokchok. And those seeds will inevitably ripen at some point in the future, in the same way that an acorn ripens into an oak tree, in a way that determines our future experiences. Okay? So, according to the Buddha, I should abbreviate ATB. ATB, according, ATTB, according to the Buddha, everything that's happening to us now is the result of past karmic seeds that we've planted on our mind stream. Everything. Everything that we experience. Okay? And similarly, everything that we will experience in the future will be determined by the karmic seeds that we're now planting on our mind. Okay? So looking at our current situation, everything that's happening to us is the result of our karmic seeds we've created. Everything we experience in the future will be the result of karmic seeds we're planting now. So this means that we are, to some degree, completely accountable for everything that happens to us, everything that we perceive going on in the world around us. And it's very easy into, yeah, what a week this was, wasn't it? Who felt like they were 100% accountable for everything that happened in the past 7 days? Anybody willing to take complete responsibility for that? Emma, you raised your hand earlier.
In my mind, I do.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, at an intellectual level, we can understand this, but in terms of real, so it means being accountable, means complete responsibility, okay? So, but it does not mean blame, and it does not mean guilt. I've heard, I don't know if this is true, you know, this is one of those Buddhist urban legends that there's no word in Tibetan for guilt. Whether that's true or not, I don't know. But that's not something that they're necessarily prone to, this feeling guilty about things. If you have a correct understanding of karma, it's a very positive attitude of responsibility, accountability, but not feeling guilty. Okay, it's very easy to fall off the cliff into self-blame and guilt when you start to think this way, and that's not what it's about at all. Any questions or comments on what I've said so far? Yeah, up here. Okay. Yeah.
So I understand.
Yeah, that's good.
So I understand clearly that our actions will determine what happens to us next.
Mm-hmm.
But, and what we think, definitely. But what happens then with those people who are murdered, who something, or children who are, let's say, because they haven't really thought about, oh, okay, well, you know what, I'm going to be murdered, and mm-hmm. this kind of thing. I am assuming this has to do with the past life and
yeah.
their pain or something else.
Yeah.
But so where does what we are paying from another lifetime begins, and when does the actions that we are thinking turn into our future? I don't have that very clear. If I'm expressing myself correctly.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're correct in that a real understanding of karma depends on an acceptance of the idea of previous lifetimes, that we have incredible karmic seeds from actions in previous lifetimes. How many people here believe in previous lifetimes or accept that idea? How many people reject it? Okay? How many people don't know? Okay, I mean, they're all fine. You know, it's not an easy concept to come with terms with, and I certainly go back and forth all the time. But for an understanding of karma, if we can at least consider that previous lifetimes are a possibility, it helps with the discussion. I'm not asking by to jump in and believe it. But if we accept the Buddha's model that we've all had countless previous lifetimes, there's no beginning to how many lifetimes we've had in the past, we're carrying an incredible karmic load from all those, from everything we've thought, done, said, and spoken in the past. Not just this lifetime, but countless previous lifetimes. I mean, it's overwhelming. And when those seeds ripen is a very complex subject that I'm not going to get into, okay? But a lot of, according to the Buddha, ATTB, a lot of what we're experiencing in this lifetime is from karmic seeds from previous lifetimes. We can't look back on something we've done in this lifetime that is the cause to perceive the climate warming necessarily or something, okay? But at some level, we are accountable for living in a world where the climate is changing, okay? Does that address your question at all?
No.
No, okay. Well, go, okay, give me elaborate on it a little bit. Yeah, maybe I didn't understand what you're asking.
Yes, I understand the karmic
mm-hmm.
process. But you said everything that we think, everything, our actions, let's say today, let's forget about my,
mm-hmm.
for
yeah.
a moment,
mm-hmm.
let's forget about my karmic,
yeah.
whatever,
mm-hmm.
whatever I have to pay in this lifetime. So maybe we shouldn't forget it. Okay, so if I am paying for all these things, and these things are happening to me today because of what I'm paying in the past, how are my thoughts and actions today will determine what happens to me in the future, if anyway, I'm still paying for that
mm-hmm.
karma.
Yeah,
When does that end? And when does my thoughts begin to say, to change the reality. Let's
yeah.
say that I killed many people. Let's say that I'm into the future. Mm-hmm. I killed Trump. So then, how is this going to be? In the
I knew his name was going to come up sometime.
I have to bring it up. Let's say that I did that. So when in the future is this karma going to end?
Uh-huh.
When does the actions of my thoughts
yeah.
begin to
okay. Work? Yeah. Okay. Well, that's actually a good question, because that's kind of what I wanted to talk about this morning. What do we do about all this load of karma that if we accept the idea that we're being crushed under this load of karma that is forcing us to perceive a world that isn't necessarily what we want. What do we do about that? Purify, okay? This is where the teachings on purification come in, and that's what I wanted to talk about a little bit. If we get this, develop this sense of, God, I've got all this karma, some of it's good, some of it's negative. And what's the difference between good and bad karma? Anybody know?
Good karma produces positive results.
Yeah.
Karma produces bad results.
Yeah, or stuff, yeah. And basically say, good karma causes happiness for me. Bad karma causes suffering for me, okay? How it affects others is a whole other question. But when I do a negative action, it creates a negative karmic seed that will cause me to suffer. Okay, experience pain or complications. If I do something virtuous, if I do a kind action, it plants a karmic seed that will force me to experience happiness. You know, there's no choice. Good karma forces you to be happy. You know, drags you kicking and screaming. I heard this on the radio the other day. Is anybody else here? I think it's at UCLA or somewhere. They're establishing an institute for the study of kindness. Someone donated like gazillions of dollars, and they're pouring in the neuroscientists and the sociologists and all these people just to study kindness. You know, I think it should be compassion, but that's a good start. Yeah. Study kindness. Anyway, so we have this enormous load of karma that is forcing us to perceive the world the way it is right now. I mean, that's everything that's going on in the world. I'm being forced to perceive that because of my karma, both my good karma and my negative karma. If I don't like what's happening to me now, the Buddhist response is, first you need to stop creating negative karma, okay? Stop adding to the store, which means primarily avoiding actions that harm others. Okay, that's the first thing. But then with all this store of negative karma that you're carrying around, you have to begin purification practice. Okay, purification practice weakens the strength of the negative karma. And if we have a direct perception of reality, if we see things the way we really are, the negative imprints can be removed. Okay. And this doesn't mean it's going to make, I'm trying not to get political. Who's someone who's really unpleasant, who's not political? Yeah. It's not, purification is not going to make your enemies go away, okay? If there's someone, you know, if there's someone in your life you don't like, you can't purify them away. Or say you've got a big problem. That's a karmic seed that's already ripened. Okay, if we take the image of the acorn, it's grown into an oak tree. You can't push that oak tree back into the acorn. Okay, all you can do is deal with it in the most positive manner. But purification works on karmic seeds that have not yet ripened. Okay, if we don't like the bad things that are happening to us now, we need to start purifying so we won't experience them again in the future. Okay? It doesn't change the karmic seeds that have already ripened. Okay? It's not going to make everything unpleasant go away now. But in the future, it creates the causes for us not to experience that. So that's why we do purification practice. And I think the more we study Buddhism, the more we become convinced that purification is really, really, really important. So I wanted to...
What is purification?
Okay, that's what I'm getting near. Yeah. No, that's good. You're asking all the leading questions. Yeah. So what is purification? Well, in a formal purification practice that we do specifically to mitigate the effects of negative karma, there are four components of a complete purification practice. What's the first one?
Regret.
No. Refuge. Okay. Yeah. This means getting in touch with your core values. If you're a practicing Buddha, it means going to the historical Buddha, his teachings, just saying, okay, this is the path I've chosen. These are the values I hold near and dear. This is the way I want to live my life. You know, just drop all the drama, all the commentary, you know, stop reading stuff on the internet. Go back and just get in touch with your core values. Take refuge in them, saying when things aren't going well, this is what I turn to. Okay? If you're not a practicing Buddha, it could be Jesus or the teachings of the church, or it could be a grandmother who you thought of as an incredibly kindly person, but going for refuge to your core values. Okay? Number two is regret. Okay. Yeah, and this is, I've heard different teachers saying, identifying each one of the four as the most important one. But I think I've heard more say that regret is probably the most important one. And that is not equal to guilt. Okay? No. Guilt is, yeah, if we find ourselves feeling guilty, regret is the sincere saying that I'm sorry that I did this because I know it's going to cause me to suffer in the future. Not only may it have hurt someone else, but specifically I regret doing this because it's going to cause me problems in the future. Okay? There are a couple analogies for this. The one that I always think of, I like to cook, and you know, you're in there chopping away and you slice your finger and you grab it. And the first reaction is, I wish I hadn't done that. You know, before you scream or you say, oh, I wish I hadn't done that. You don't say, oh, I'm a bad person. I'm an evil person. I deserve this. This is really punishment. No, you just say, I wish I hadn't done that. Okay? The other analogy is the one of the three Buddhist monks who go into a bar, and they each take a seat at the bar, and the bartender reaches behind and grabs something off the rack behind him and pours them each a drink. And the first monk drinks his down, the second monk drinks his down, and then just as the third monk is drinking his, he notices the first monk fall down dead off his bar stool. Then he notices the second monk fall down dead off his bar stool, and he's just drunk it. And so his thought is, I wish I hadn't done that, because that's going to cause me problems, okay? He's not saying I'm bad for it having done this, or I'm stupid because there's no way I could have known. He said, I wish I hadn't done this, okay? That's the feeling of regret, when we know we've done something that is going to cause us problems in the future. But it is not guilt, okay? It's not this, I am a bad person, or okay? Big difference there. So the next part of a formal purification practice is regret, regretting our past actions of body, speech, and mind that are going to cause suffering, okay? Third part, what's the third one, anybody remember?
Remedy.
The remedy, okay? And this can be anything, you know, this is where the teachings come in very helpful. It can be saying a mantra, okay? If you're trying to purify, if you assume that you've killed in the past, even though you don't remember it, you may want to do some animal liberations. Okay, that purifies past actions of killing. If you want to purify past actions of stinginess or miserliness, you can do something generous. Geshe Gelug always says, you have to get up where you fell down. So, if you said something really mean to somebody, sitting in your room and doing some mantras isn't really going to purify that too well. You need to go to them and apologize, okay? If it's something like, if you want to purify that, you know, this doesn't mean removing yourself from the problem. But there's some actual doing a remedy for past actions that we know are there, but we don't remember from previous lives if we accept that. This is where a practice like saying some mantra may be useful. And then the last part of a complete purification practice is the resolve, which is making a sincere but realistic action, a resolve not to do that action again for a specified length of time. So if you've had a problem with lying, you can say, okay, I'm not going to lie for 24 hours. Okay, don't say, I'm not going to lie from now till eternity, till now until all beings achieve enlightenment. That's not realistic. But you set it something that's realistic. Okay, I'm not going to get angry for the next 6 hours. Okay, I'm not going to steal for a month or a year or whatever. Okay, so you resolve not to do the action again that you're purifying, and this is based on a realistic understanding of what's possible for you and the situation that you find yourself in. So this is what makes a complete purification practice, and there are lots of them that we do here at the center. One's called Vajrasattva, which is a very common one. We have a purification practice on New Year's Eve, and then if you read the teachings of the Buddha, you'll come up with all sorts of other ones. But it doesn't have to be so formalized, but if you really want to start weakening the strength of those negative karmic seeds that are there, this is one way to go about it. You know, I think it has a lot of similarities with confession in certain churches. Okay. Yeah, you regret what you do it and you resolve not to do it again. You acknowledge it. So I think psychologically we can see how this may work. Any comments or questions?
Do you know Venerable Tendrin's fifth one?
No.
Rejoice.
Rejoice, okay. Rejoicing is always good, yeah. Here we go. Yeah, wait for the mic, okay?
You were saying that the remedy for if you've done harm to somebody is not necessarily going to your room and doing a mantra, but directly apologizing to that person. What if there's a person that personally I have some guilt over some things I've done to some people in the past, that I feel like my actions hurt some people, and I'd like to resolve those things. They still feel unresolved, so I guess I have some guilt about that. But it's not necessarily easy to go and directly apologize to these people at this time. So, do you have any ideas about?
Well, if a person's dead, I mean, you know, if you've been mean to someone and they're dead, a lot of us have regrets about how we treat our parents at times. They may not be around, mean things we said to them, or how we didn't do what our parents told us to do. No, I'm looking back there. But we can't go and say, no, I'm just giving her a hard time. Yeah. That's where doing a formal purification practice dedicated to that purpose could reduce the strength of that negative imprint. Yeah, we can't always go directly to the person and clean things up. But
well,
if that's a possibility.
It's like, I'm confused personally about whether or not I should do this in certain instances, and I don't know, like, I don't know, like, if I should or not, like, if it's going to do more damage.
Yeah, or not. Yeah. Anybody have any suggestions? Let's see, let's go to Peter first and then over here.
I've heard some people, and I've certainly had to do it, unfortunately, but where I've apologized to the person almost visualized it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's helpful. And I think it kind of depends, and you just have to use the best wisdom that you have. But that's one thing that actually AA is phenomenal about is, you know, part of the process is going back and making amends with people that you've hurt as, you know, mm-hmm. part of that. So, yeah, you just do the best you can do, I guess.
All right.
Sometimes it's just situations that are so fractured that I can't delude myself into thinking anything I say is going to make it better. It might make it worse. So what I've done, I did it Friday night, but what I've done is generally if that's the case, I'm going to remove myself from the situation mm-hmm. so it's not to cause any more harm.
Yeah.
And let the karma just kind of spill out and, and it's going to be what it's going to be.
Yeah.
You know, I've done that. Well, with some family, but like Friday night, I'm at some dinner, and yeah, the those four letters starting in T, ending in P, yeah, it's not good.
Uh-huh.
So when people tell me, you know, all I care about is the economy being good or it's fake news, I literally, because we were out to dinner, just shut my mouth, so I won't say anything else, you know. And then I just said, you know, okay, that it is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, the first thing is always...
So sometimes restraint, to me, is the best way.
I mean, the first thing is always not to create more negative karma. Yeah, definitely. Okay, let's go.
Yeah, to your comment, I mean, sometimes you can't help a situation, but we should always be in a position not to cause additional harm.
Yeah.
But I did have a question about how can you have regret about something that occurred in a previous life that you don't even know it, you know.
Yeah.
How do you have regret about that?
Yeah, that's a good question. You can't regret specific actions, but you can regret generically. You know, I regret every time I've killed in the past, whether I remember it or not. Okay? I mean, it's very nonspecific in that instance, but if we accept the idea of previous lifetimes or just in this lifetime, we've all killed insects and animals, we can just do a collective, I regret all the times that I've killed in the past, both for the suffering it's caused others and for the fact that it's caused me to suffer in the future. Yeah, so we can purify stuff we don't remember, okay, because we can assume that those imprints are there. Yeah.
That's kind of what I was going to say about is if you have, say, you have a particular person that you are receiving harm from over and over, then I just think about I regret what I did to that person before because it must have been really bad. So depending on what's coming your way, then you can just think, I really wish I hadn't created those causes because now I'm receiving it. But then you actually feel, you don't know who the being was, but you can feel a little regret because you helped create those causes. So it's kind of in your face. Whatever you're receiving, you think, I must have kicked them around the block. So,
talking to the gentleman who was addressing the fact that he doesn't, that if he apologized, it would make things probably worse. Sometimes what I have done, I know that if I apologize personally, that's going to have a bad negative result. What I do is I write to the person and I say, I'm really sorry. This is not what I intended to do, or if I did, I was wrong, whatever it may be. And so the words are written.
Mm-hmm.
So the person who may feel angry at me or whoever caused the problem or the hurt or whatever it may be, has the opportunity to read it again later on in the future. Mm-hmm. Maybe not. Maybe it's just going to tear apart the paper, whatever the note. But at least you have made an effort.
Yeah.
You know that you have made an effort to apologize.
Yeah.
So send something written. I think that works.
Mm-hmm.
Right? At least it has worked with me.
Okay. So we've got a couple in the back. Let's go. And then come back to Peter.
So sometimes when you do something, there's just too much energy. It's too much confusion to actually feel that you're able to relate to it directly without causing more confusion.
Mm-hmm.
So but it's still worthwhile to practice with it. You know, so practicing with it, either talking to friends or talking to your teacher or doing practice to me, I find that when I relate to it, at least openly, and work with it, so that, you know, it reduces
mm-hmm.
the energy and actually makes, you know, it creates further relaxation. And often at that point, there becomes a point where you can relate to it more directly because it's not so upsetting. You know, mm-hmm. you've kind of handled it and relaxed with it and can move forward with it in a more intelligent way.
Okay. Thank you. Let's see. Let's go with Peter and then here.
When I think about this, I also think that, like, the rejoicing is really good. I think once you kind of go through this process, then you kind of have to let it go
mm-hmm.
and say to yourself, okay, you know, I had my part in this, and I've kind of taken at least inner accountability for that. I've tried to purify it. But that doesn't mean, to Jill's point, I'm not going to still read some more. You know, that's going to kind of have to run its course.
Mm-hmm.
But I have to kind of do what I can do internally and then let go of it.
Yeah.
I think that's really important. And that feels, once you're able to do that, that feels wonderful.
Yeah.
So.
I mean, I think not letting go is kind of getting close to feeling guilty. Yeah, they're kind of the same. Negative mind stream. Let's see, let's go here and then Renee, okay.
So this actually came to me while I was sitting here because this is a thought process that I've had many times myself. I'm the type of person I can be driving down the road and have a thought of something I did 20 years ago and just shudder. You know, oh my God, I can't believe I said that. I can't believe I did that. And oftentimes in thinking about it, like I can think of several situations that may have happened 20 years or more ago that I think perhaps I should apologize to that mm-hmm. person. And I almost in every case conclude that I shouldn't.
Uh-huh.
And the reason, I'm not sure about the reason, and this is what just came to me, and this is really directed more at me than anyone else here in the room, is it occurred to me that has anyone ever apologized to me before and caused me suffering
mm-hmm.
through that apology? And I can't think of a single mm-hmm. one. Now, someone, and so I was thinking, am I really concerned that I'm going to cause this person suffering? Or am I concerned they're going to roll their eyes and think I'm a fool?
Yeah.
Is that the real concern? That I don't want to look like a pandering fool begging for forgiveness?
Yeah.
And that's about all I have to say about it, is because I think you have to be really careful. Like if you're trying to be considerate of someone else's feelings, really think it through.
Yeah,
are you really going to cause them suffering, or is it going to dent your pride?
Yeah.
But
then it becomes an ego problem.
Yeah. Well, you know, I'm not making fun of anyone, but this becomes not necessarily common. It happens enough when someone comes up with something. Somebody out of the blue comes up with something that happened 20 years ago. Sometimes my reaction is, what workshop are you in?
Exactly. What program are you working
yeah,
in?
Yeah, exactly. Who's making you do this? Yeah. Not that it's not sincere, but yeah, that's become a, yeah. Let's see, let's go to Renee.
Well, I thought of if you can't apologize directly to the person or there's a specific thing you're trying to make amends for. Maybe there's a related charity you could donate to or volunteer
yeah.
some
mm-hmm.
time
yeah.
to.
Mm-hmm.
So make doing something
yeah.
along those.
Exactly, yeah. Okay. Okay, so let's do a little purification practice now that we're a little bit familiar with it. This will be in the form of a guided meditation. So begin by checking your posture. And again, a couple deep breaths from the abdomen to help quiet our mind, become more focused. and allow your breathing to return to its normal pattern. And begin by setting your motivation, generating the bodhicitta motivation, that everything we do is so we can be of greater benefit to others. And we'll do a couple minutes of breathing meditation, just placing the mind on the breath. And now we'll begin our formal purification practice. And we're going to do this as if we were all practicing Buddhists. I know not everyone here is, but we'll assume that we are. First, we go for refuge. And we're going to go to refuge for the historical Buddha, human being who, by working with his own mind, completely developed all his qualities of wisdom and compassion. So we visualize him in the form of Shakyamuni Buddha that we see in the statue behind me on the altar. And we visualize, which just means to imagine, that's all it is, that he's in front of us, life size, about a body length in front of us, at the level of our forehead, sitting in meditation posture on an open lotus. He's three-dimensional. We can walk around him if we want. Living. And his body is made completely of radiant golden light. And we see in him all the qualities of wisdom and compassion that we hope to develop in ourselves. He's not a god, but he is the perfect example of everything we wish to become. of everything we want to do with our life. And maintaining the visualization of the Buddha in front of us, we think about what specifically we want to purify. And it's good to be specific here. Either something we've done in this lifetime that we can remember, or if, for example, we have problems with anger in this lifetime, we can assume we've been angry countless times in previous lifetimes and we want to purify those actions of anger. Or purify any killing we've done in the past. But we can also use a specific example from this lifetime if we said something mean to someone 30 years ago. So we bring that action to mind and we generate sincere regret for having done that. Regret because we know it will cause us to suffer. Regardless of how much suffering it causes for others, it definitely will cause us to suffer. And we regret that. We wish we hadn't done that. And for the remedy, we're going to recite one of the Buddha's mantras, Om Mani Padme Hum, a very short one. And we'll just recite that, say it together a couple times, and we'll just recite it very quietly to ourselves for several minutes. And as we recite this, we maintain the visualization of the Buddha in front of us. Om Mani Padme Hum. 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 And now we make a vow to ourselves and to the Buddha not to do this action for a specified length of time, being realistic with ourselves. I am not going to fill in the blank for fill in the blank. And now we imagine that the Buddha is very pleased with what we have done. He moves through space to the point above our heads, and he dissolves into beautiful golden light that completely fills our body, purifying all negative actions of body, speech, and mind, so that our mind and the mind of the Buddha are of one nature, completely wise, completely compassionate. And this experience is incredibly blissful, and we just stay with that experience of being one with the Buddha. And to finish up, you can let the visualization dissolve, and we'll do our dedication prayers in the gold prayer book on page 246, I think, Master Shantideva. Let's see, we'll go do 21 Taras. Yeah, okay. You want to lead us in that? Yeah, we'll do 21 Taras on page 244. Yeah, we've got plenty of time to do that. All right, no, wrong page. Yeah, we're... One ninety-one. Praises to the 21 Taras.
Okay, praises to the 21 Taras. On page 191, we'll do the invocation. From your sublime abode at the Potala, O Tara born of the green letter Tom, your crown adorned with Amitabha, action mother of the Buddhas of the three times, Tara, please come with your attendants. The gods and demigods bow to your lotus feet, O Tara. You who rescue all who are destitute, to you, Mother Tara, I pay homage. All my prostrate to the noble prince and liberator.
Homage.
Flies like lightning, instantaneous, sprung from all the instamens of the
Lord of 3421 load. Homage to you, space combines, 100 autumn moons at full, blazing with light rays resplendent, as a thousand star collection. Homage, golden blue, unload, water born and hand adorned, giving effort, calm, austerity, patience, meditation, mercy. Homage, crown of Tata God, action, triumph without limb, relied on by conquerors told, having reached every perfection. Homage, filling with Tutar, whom desire direction and space, trampling with her feet the seven, were able to draw forth all being. Homage worshipped by the All, or Shakna Agni Brahma Maharut, honored by the host of sphere, scorchers of Gandhavas Yaks. Homage with her tray and pates, destroying pose magic diagram, her feet pressing left outright, blazing in a raging fireblaze. Homage to a very dreadful destroyer of Mars champion, she with frowning lotus is, who is slayer of all enemies. Homage at the heart of finger, so adorn her with three jewel moon. Light ray masses all excite, all directions wheels adorn her. Homage to her joyous radia, crowning them. Mirthful laughing with the tower, subjugating Mars Deva. Homage she able to some, all his guardians ascend, shaking, frowning with her homes, saving from every misfortune. Homage crown with garner's crest, moon all ornaments will shine. Amitabha in her hair, sending out Masad eternal. Homage she misery to blaze, like the unending fire abide. Christ has left the choice around you, troops of enemies to storm. Homage to you, strike the ground with her palm and with her foot beats, scaling with her letters. Seven levels she does conquer. Homage has been peaceful, peaceful. Here's the oldest peace, Nirvana. She endowed with home and soul, destroyer of the greedy. Homage she rejoiced around, tearing foes by Jesus' son. Free with the mantra, arrangement of the thin light. Homage to her with the letter, other shape of syllable. Homage holding in her hand, Haramak Muna Deva Lake, Tantazir Tara and totally dispelling forth. Homage to you, gods and the kings and the kinara. Armored in all joyful splendor and dreams and con. Homage she is to the bright with radiance of sun and full. With Tritara and Tutara, she dispels of her contagion. Homage full of liberated natures, destroys foes of transjaksha, and records the supreme truth. These praises with the root month, prostrations are served.
21. And the prayer of the benefits is on page 190. 190. Whoever is endowed with devotion for the goddess and recites this with supreme faith, remembering it at dawn upon waking in the evenings,
will be granted all fearlessness,
will perfectly pacify all negativities, and will eliminate all unfortunate migrations. The multitudes of conquerors will quickly grant initiation. Thus endowed with this greatness, one will eventually reach the state of a Buddha.
If affected by the most terrible poison, whatever ingested drunk from a living being,
just by remembering will one be thoroughly cleansed.
If this prayer is recited two, three, or seven times,
it will pacify all the sufferings of torment caused by spirits, fevers, and poisons, and by other beings as well. If you wish for a child, you will get a child. If you wish for wealth, you will receive wealth. All your wishes will be fulfilled and
all obstacles pacified. Okay, on page 246, Master Shantideva's dedication verses. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain an ocean of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms, the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth. Those weak with sorrow find joy. May the Lord find hope, constant happiness, prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful hearts. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be freed from their ailments. Whatever diseases in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid and those bound be free. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain, dispel the mysteries of the world. And then on page 244 and 245, we'll do the long life prayers for our teachers. Start with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. Then go down to the right for Gyumei Ken Rinpoche, and then to the left for Lama Zopa Rinpoche. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chinrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. The one who mastered his speech at a very young age, the one with great patience who received the name Avalokiteshvara, the one with great precision who spread the teachings of Lama Tsongkhapa on bliss and bliss, Lama ornament of the main until samsara ends. You who uphold the subduer's moral way, who serve as the bountiful bearer of all, sustaining, preserving, and spreading Najna's victorious doctrine, who masterfully accomplished magnificent prayer, honoring the three jewels, Savior of myself and others, your disciples, please, please live long. And then we'll do seven green Tara mantras for the long, healthy, happy lives of our teachers Geshe Gelug and Geshe Thampo. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re So Ha. 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 Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re So. Om Tare Tu Tare Tu Re So. Okay, thank you everyone. We have a newcomer session now, and then we have tea and refreshments in the lobby.
Could anybody, yeah.
And food.
Could anybody work the bookstore if I'll do the newcomer orientation? We need a volunteer who knows how to do that.
Yes.
Do we have one?